High levels of the toxic chemicals known as PFAS have been found across Wisconsin in drinking water and groundwater, but they're in lakes and other surface water as well.
A new study shows the highest levels in the state are found in two Dane County lakes, specifically in the foam on those lakes. PFAS can repel substances. These chemicals are often used in nonstick coating for pans and water-resistant coatings for rain jackets. They've also been used heavily in firefighting foams, especially at airports.
Since 2015, most manufacturers have removed PFAS from their products, but PFAS are still around because it's hard for them to naturally break down. That's why they're often called forever chemicals.
We're talking about PFAS with Christy Remicall, professor of civil and environmental engineering at UW-Madison, co-author of that study that found high PFAS levels in Dane County lakes. Christy, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I want to start with your research looking at surface water and PFAS and specifically lake foam. Can you talk a little bit about what you set out to find?
So state agencies and other people have measured PFAS in foams that form naturally on our lakes and rivers and found high concentrations. And we wanted to test if that was true in the state of Wisconsin and how that varied depending on which lake and river we were looking at. So we measured foam and water samples in lakes from and rivers from across the state. And we found, of course, PFAS in all of our samples. I think the most important thing was we found very high concentrations of PFAS in the foam, orders of magnitude higher than what was in the water below.
That's really weird to me. Why would it be more concentrated in the foam than in the body of water at large?
Yeah, so this concentration in the foam has to do with the type of chemicals that PFAS are. They're surfactants, which means they like to go to that air-water interface, like the very top of the water. If you think about foam, it's a bunch of little bubbles, so it's basically a bunch of these interfaces. And because of their chemical nature, this is just where PFAS like to accumulate.
So it's like the dish soap in our sink. It would kind of bubble up and accumulate at the top?
Exactly.
Why these lakes? You found the highest levels in a couple Madison lakes. How much higher were they than in other lakes, and why would they have higher levels?
Yeah, the highest concentration of foam we measured in the state was in Lake Monona. The water in Lake Monona has higher PFAS concentrations because of Starkweather Creek, which is likely impacted by firefighting foam use upstream. And so we found concentrations of over 300,000 parts per trillion in the foam. The lowest concentration of PFAS we measured in foam was around 2,000 parts per trillion. And for comparison, what we found in the water was from between 6 and 140. So these concentrations in foam were much higher.
Now, that might raise questions for people who wonder if I fish or want to swim or I have paddled on Starkweather Creek, this place with this very high concentration. Are these things we worry about?
So there are fish advisories for Lake Monona and downstream in Dane County because of PFAS. And we aren't as concerned about dermal contact, so skin contact, so paddling and things like that, I wouldn't be as worried about. But it is good to pay attention to local fish advisories.
Are there conditions that make foam more likely to accumulate up in a lake or on the shore of a lake?
Yep. So most of what's in the foam is actually naturally occurring. I should say that the PFAS make up a pretty small percentage of it. So you need two different things to form foam. You need a surface active substance, which includes PFAS, but it also includes naturally present organic carbon that's in all of our lakes anyway. And then you need a way of introducing air bubbles into the water. And so we'll typically only see foam on really, really windy days when you're getting a lot of air mixed into the water. You can also see foam forming downstream of a dam, for example. So you need these really like windy or turbulent conditions.
And that's a really interesting point. I might look at a lake or a river. You see the foaming river. You can't just look and say, this foam is natural, this foam is PFAS without testing it, I guess, right?
No, there's no way to know. And like I said, PFAS make up a very small percentage of the total material in the foam. Most of it is likely naturally occurring, but the PFAS really accumulate in this type of material. So I think it's good to avoid contact with foam in general because there's no way to know from looking at it.
Now, maybe this is a dumb question. If the PFAS is concentrating on the surface in this foam, is that an opportunity for remediation? Is there some potential way to skim that off and get some of those chemicals out of the body of water?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. People in the research community are using, it's called foam fractionation, as a way of trying to remove PFAS from more concentrated waste like landfill leachate, things like that. But yeah, that's something people are trying to do as one remediation strategy.
I've talked about PFAS a lot on the show over the years here in Wisconsin. A lot of times the focus is on, groundwater, well water, drinking water, understandably. How big a concern is surface water, our lakes, streams, rivers, and ponds in the state?
Sure, it really varies depending on where you are. There is a lot of variability in the PFAS concentrations you find in surface waters. And so there are water bodies within the state that have higher levels of PFAS compared to others.
Do we worry? I mean, of course, we're worried about humans and contacting and ingesting PFAS. Well, things live in our surface waters. Do we worry about the environmental impact of PFAS?
Of course. Yeah, I think there's a lot that we're still learning about the ecosystem impacts, but yeah, there's many different ways that these chemicals could potentially be harmful.
Are we seeing a decline in the PFAS pipeline? Fewer new PFAS chemicals getting in the water? I could see it going the other way too. Like maybe there's so much out there from past use that it's still surfacing, it's still leaching into our water.
That's a really hard question to answer. There are certainly some PFAS chemicals that we're not making anymore in the US, like PFOS and PFOA, for example, two that are driving regulations. We're no longer making them in the US. However, the chemistry is very complicated. We use other PFAS that turn into these chemicals that we're worried about, PFOA and things like that. There's, of course, this legacy of contamination. These chemicals, some of them don't have any known natural degradation processes, so they last a very long time. Yeah, I think we're moving in that direction. There's a lot of public pressure for companies to stop using PFAS, and I think that's really important. I think the long-term thing we have to do is not use these chemicals, unless they're absolutely necessary. But I think we have a long ways to go.
And Christy, you raise a really good point there. I think I often am a little sloppy and I say PFAS singular, like it's a thing. It's actually lots and lots of different chemicals, right? Can you talk about the variety of chemicals and the difficulty in trying to study the way they function in the environment?
Yeah, we actually don't know how many different PFAS chemicals there are. I've seen estimates over 9,000 or even higher numbers of different PFAS chemicals that exist. You're right, we only have met like r methods for measuring a pretty small fraction of these PFAS. There's a lot we don't know, and yeah, people can use other chemicals that we haven't studied before, and we need to find out about those too. There's a lot of PFAS chemicals out there.
We are talking about toxic chemicals, the class of chemicals called PFAS, often called forever chemicals. Christy Rummikall is with us, professor of civil and environmental engineering at UW-Madison, co-author of a new study finding high concentrations in foam in many Wisconsin lakes, most notably a couple lakes in Dane County. Christy, part of your research has to do with what happens to chemicals when they're exposed to the sun, as I understand it, right? The sun, being exposed to the sun and air, I think, can make chemicals change. Is that something that could be happening with this PFAS we're talking about on the surface of a lake?
Yeah, that's a good question. We do a lot of photochemistry work in my group, but not with PFAS. PFAS, because of their chemical structure, don't absorb light. So they don't do a lot of photochemistry, so they're kind of boring from that perspective.
Well, and that's part of the worry, right? That's why the people call them forever chemicals sometimes. There's not a lot of things that do break them down.
That's true. There are thousands of different PFAS, and so it's important to not, lump them all together. But the ones we worry a lot about, like PFOS and PFOA and the related compounds, we don't have any known natural degradation processes for them. So that's why they're called forever chemicals often.
Are there ways to somehow at least sequester them, make them not be in places we're going to come in contact with them?
Sure. So I think the good news is that there's a ton of research going on in this for, degradation technologies that could be used to break these things down. There are certainly ways of, capturing them from water, and so removing them from water, and then you have, your activated carbon or things like that, that you have to take care of. But I think the good news is there's a lot of really, really good work going on in this area. So we'll get there.
You mentioned you're looking at other substances in water and how it interacts with the sun. Apart from PFAS, what kind of pollutants do you have your eye on?
Yeah, so we've been doing a lot of work in my group on aquatic pesticides. These are chemicals that are used to control invasive species in lakes and rivers in Wisconsin. And so we study how those kind of chemicals break down in the environment, how long they last, that sort of thing. That's one group of chemicals we're really interested in.
Are we looking at long-term impacts of some of these chemicals? And I know you're at UW-Madison, a different lake than the one we've talked about. Lake Mendota, I think, is sometimes called the most studied lake on the planet because it has a Department of Limnology right on its shores. Are you able to do sort of long-term studies to look at the impact of the things humans have put in the water?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. And in this foam study, we'd also measure Lake Mendota as well, and it's right outside our lab too. So yeah, that's true. That lake gets a lot of attention for many of those reasons. It's a little bit harder for PFAS, for example, to look at long-term water concentrations. We haven't had good methods for measuring the concentrations that are relevant in the environment for all that long. So it's hard to go back in time. One way that we can do that is through looking at sediment cores, like the sediment that accumulates in the bottom of a lake. So people have done that, for example, in the Great Lakes and looked at longer term trends in different PFAS chemicals. So there are some ways to do to look at those sorts of questions.
And I understand your lab does some research, not just here in Wisconsin, but other critical waters around the world. Where else have you done research?
Yeah, so we do a lot of our work is grounded in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. We stick pretty close to home. So we have some sites that we've worked on up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan or in also the Lower Peninsula and some work up around Minnesota, around Lake Superior as well.
And are there specific things about our Midwestern geology and hydrology that might have a particular impact on the sorts of things we find?
Not necessarily. I think a lot of the things that we learn in Wisconsin, we can relate to other places as well. I think it's a really interesting place to study. We do have different, types of water chemistry in different lakes. And so we often, for certain projects, we'll go to different lakes and look at how their water chemistry impacts things. I think that just helps us translate things further. I think it's a really great place to work because we have so many water bodies and so many water issues that are important to us. So it's important that our work is relevant to the people around us.
And of course, PFAS isn't just in Wisconsin. What do you hear from your colleagues around the country? Are they dealing with the same kind of problems we are here in the state?
Absolutely. PFAS is really a global issue. So many people in my field are working on PFAS. It is impacting everybody. So it's something that's important for lots of different places to look at.
Now, your study on foam got a lot of attention in the media, including from us here in the state. What's next for you? What are some of the next big research topics you have your eye on?
Yeah, so we're working on, of course, probably too many different things, but one big project we have going on is looking at PFAS inputs to Lake Superior. So looking at both rivers and precipitation, so rainfall as sources of PFAS, a number of other projects, but that's a big one that we're working on right now.
All right, Christy, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks again for having me.
That's Christy Rumacall, professor of civil and environmental engineering at UW-Madison. We talked about a study she co-authored about PFAS levels in the foam on Wisconsin lakes.